Thanks for joining us. I'm Diane Rehm.
The Millers of Mother's Best Flower bring you that lovesick blues boy, Hank Williams.
I got a feeling called the blues. Oh, Lord, since my baby said goodbye. Lord, I don't know what I'll do. All I do is sit and sigh. Oh, Lord, good Luigi.
And that's exactly how the Mother's Best Flower radio show opened January 10th, 1951. It aired at 7:15 a.m. on WSM in Nashville. Hank Williams was at the pinnacle of his popularity at the time and on the road constantly, which is why many of the shows were recorded and preserved. But as we'll discuss, they were almost lost. The box set of these shows, Hank Williams, the complete Mother's Best Recordings Plus, has just been released. Joining me in the studio, Hank Williams' daughter, Jet Williams, who produced the set, and Colin Escott, who wrote the extensive liner notes for it. I know you'll want to talk to both of these folks, so give us a call, 800-433-8850. Send us your email to drshow@wamu.org. Feel free to join us on Facebook or Twitter. Good morning, Jet Williams.
Good morning, and thank you all for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure, and good morning to you, Colin Escott.
Good morning, Diane. Thank you for having us.
So glad to have you here. Colin, tell us about the Mother's Own Flower Show.
Mother's Best, well, it's kind of, it's like a little catechism on how the country music business has changed, you know, that back then, the top country singer of the day would do a 15-minute flower show, a 15-minute show on local radio sponsored by a flower milling company for $100 a week, you know? That's I mean, it's hard to think of any top country singer who'd do that today. And but pretty much all of them did back then. But the thing is, I think, that these shows were recorded onto acetate at a time when tape was just coming in. And I think if they'd been recorded on tape, they would have been recorded over and just lost forever.
Gone.
Yeah, but because they
just
were on acetate,
yeah,
they were preserved.
Huh.
And they stayed in storage. I mean, Jet knows the story better than I do, but you know, they were preserved for you know, in storage for a good number of years and found, litigated over, and finally now we can have them out, you know, just like a little time capsule from 1951.
That's what I want to get to, why it's taken so long to get them out, Jet.
Well, these were recorded, as you said, in the year 1951. They were for a one-time play when my dad could not be in the studio, because you're talking a morning show 5 days a week, and his touring schedule was so intense that he couldn't be present. And so they recorded it onto the acetate. And so when my dad was in, say, Cleveland, Ohio, the engineer would play the acetate and then put it over in a box. And that's where they stayed until around, I believe it was in the 60s, 1960s, when WSM was moving. And they were deciding what they were going to take and what they were going to throw away. And what kind of breaks my heart is what got thrown away during that move. But a gentleman by the name of Les Leverett saw the boxes and said, "Are y'all going to throw that away?" And they said, "Yes." He said, "Would you mind if I take them?" And they said, "No, go ahead." So Les took these acetates and kept them for years. And during that period of time, they were transferred over to tape. And Les and a gentleman by the name of Hillis Buttram, who was a later drifting cowboy, tried to see if they could find some interest in having these duplicated. It wasn't until, I believe, in the 90s that a company bought a bootleg copy. They were going to commercially exploit it. And in the meantime, Les Leverett had given me all of the acetates, the originals.
I see.
And my husband, Keith Atkinson, who's one of the attorneys for the estate, got an injunction to stop this company. And Hank Jr. and I, for change, were on the same legal side of the table. Mm-hmm. We fought against this company. And in the meantime, Polydor and Polygram, which was the record company, jumped in and they said they owned these recordings. So we went through an 8-year legal battle.
Wow.
The courts ruled that these recordings belonged to the estate. And then when we got clear title on the recordings, then we partnered with Time Life to have this released.
And I must say, the container in which the whole set comes is really spectacular, looking like an old-time radio. Now, Jed, talk about your own situation, because you didn't know until you were an adult that you were truly Hank Williams' daughter.
Well, I grew up as an adopted child, and like a lot of adopted children, I went on the search to find out who I was and what happened. And I didn't know if I would get the answers that I wanted to hear, but, you know, I wanted to try and find out. And, of course, I hit brick wall after brick wall. And unfortunately, at that time, the Internet was not in existence. So, you know, I did not have the information at my fingertips. So I had to do it the old-fashioned, pound the pavement, knock on the doors. And but what was wonderful for me is I met a gentleman by the name of Keith Atkinson. And he helped me in my search. And I found out that everyone knew of my existence. I was actually the best-kept secret in country music, and that my father had signed legal papers concerning me 3 months before I was born. And in these papers, they were drawn up by his attorney, and it's actually the only notarized copy that my dad ever signed of anything. And in it, it says, "This is my baby. I want my baby, and I'm going to take my baby." Hmm. And what happened was my dad died on January 1st. They buried him on January the 4th, and I was born before the sun came up on January the 6th. So I never met my father, but with that paper, I knew that when I made that announcement, it wasn't just that I was the daughter of Hank Williams. It was that my daddy wanted me.
And what about your mother?
By the time I found out who she was deceased. But when I was born in Montgomery, Alabama, my grandmother, Mrs. Williams, Hank's mother, took me to her home, and she legally adopted me.
So was your mother not in the picture at all?
Well, if you read that pre-birth custody contract, my parents had some kind of relationship, because in that document, they both got visitation. I would spend the summers with her in California, the winter months with my father, much like a divorce decree. I think at that time when my dad passed away, she's giving birth, not married. You know, the grandmother steps in and says, "Look, I can give this child all of these, a home and all of these advantages that, you know," she said, "and this is what my son wanted." I think that's one of the reasons that she released me to my grandmother.
Tell me about the song, "The Blind Child's Prayer," Colin.
You know, I think what's fascinating about "The Blind Child's Prayer" is that when Hank made his commercial recordings, they were rooted in the here and now. They were songs that he'd just written for the most part, so we never really got a sense of how deep his roots went. And this is a song that was an old folk song from the Ozarks, and it did, you know, Hank by doing it showed that he was deeply, deeply grounded in where country music came from.
Well, Hank, what are you doing there, will you?
Go right ahead. I'll be with you in a minute.
Well, just put that book away.
It says, "Good morning, Judge." Are you the judge?
No, let me see that book there. You got. Let me see that. I see something I want to look at.
Oh, all right. Welcome, friends and neighbors. We're proud to be here with you again this morning. Boys, let's go back this morning and get one of the old timers. I think this is about one of the first songs I ever learned. Key of C. the blind child, eh? Oh, Father, tonight they say you are to wed another bride, that you will hold her in your arms where my dear mother died. They say the name my mother bore, but Father, is she kind and true like the one we loved before? And is her footstep soft and light, her voice so meek and mild? And Father, do you think she'll love your blind and helpless child?
And that is Hank Williams singing from the Complete Mother's Best Recordings. He is, of course, singing the Blind Child's Prayer. Here in the studio, Jet Williams, daughter of Hank Williams and Colin Escott, Grammy Award-winning author and line writer. Stay with us.
When I've cried myself to sleep, as I so often do. Her eyes were blue, her hair was auburn, her smile was like an angel dear. She was her daddy's only daughter on the Tennessee border. One night I took a ride just across the line. Well, I picked her up in a pickup truck and she broke this heart of mine. Her mama said, no, she's my only daughter. But we got married on the Tennessee border.
And welcome back. Two people are here in the studio with me as we talk about Hank Williams and the Complete Mother's Best Recordings. We've already had an email from someone who says, this is Jean in Raleigh, who says, last Christmas my wife gave me the box set of three unreleased recordings by Hank, and I've enjoyed learning and relearning and playing some of these old songs, which have been so influential on country, bluegrass, and folk music in this country and abroad. And we're pleased to have with us this morning Jet Williams. She is the daughter of Hank Williams, the only daughter. Her autobiography, Ain't Nothing As Sweet As My Baby, was published in 1990. Colin Escott is Grammy Award-winning author and music historian. He's written the liner notes for the Complete Mother's Best Recordings. We are going to open the phone shortly to take your calls and read your email, your messages on Facebook, as well as your tweets. Jet Williams, your father died at such a young age. He was only 29. Talk about his problems with alcohol and drugs.
Well, you know, I believe that he did have some problems with alcohol and prescription drugs because he had had a back operation. But I believe in my heart of hearts that the myth spinners, as I call them, tend to want to play the dark side up. And if you believed everything that you read about him, he's especially with this radio show and with us being able to hear him, how he's an MC and tells jokes and that he actually is happy and laughing, is that he is not as dark a figure and he wasn't as down and out and lonely as some of the people that have written about him, in the fact that by dying at 29, he only had like a 3.5-year career. And to have achieved all that he did in that window, it's like, you know, threading the eye of a needle.
Extraordinary.
And to have been out as much as they would like for him to be, I just logically can't fathom that he wrote all those songs, recorded all those songs, made all those appearances, did the operas, did the radio shows, and all of that. I'm not saying that he didn't. I think that when the back operation came in, that with the touring schedule, and also we have to remember it's 1951-52, we don't have the luxuries we've got today of these tour buses and 24-hour interstate, you know, truck stops and interstates and private jets and things like that to get around in.
One of the reports I read indicated he may have been born with spina bifida.
In the autopsy that was performed in Oak Hill, West Virginia, that is on the autopsy report, but I don't know that he had any curvature of the spine. He was 6 feet tall. I know that he had the back operation.
Was it for pain that this back operation took place?
That I'm not. Colin may have know the exact reason why he had that.
You know, one of the first songs he ever wrote back, you know, way before he became famous, was a song called "The Backache Blues." So, you know, clearly this was a problem that had dogged him his whole life. And I think I think traveling, as Jet said, on two-lane highways in family sedans,
right,
you know, day after day after day, must have just exacerbated a pre-existing condition, I think.
There's an old story that he ran away as a child and joined the circus and got thrown from a horse. The other story that Jerry Rivers told me was that he was hunting with my dad and he went to jump a little creek and slipped and fell and hit his back. And I think that might have been maybe the incident that set off major back problems.
There is a song that has very special significance for you, and that's "On Top of Old Smoky." Why?
Well, growing up as an adopted child and then to find out that I'm the daughter of Hank Williams and that he wanted me and that his mother adopted me and wanted to keep me in the family, one of the things is to be able to hear it. For me to hear my dad tell a story or tell me a family tidbit as opposed to reading what someone thought he thought. And the way he sets this song up, he says it's the top pop tune in the country. But he's going to sing it the way his grandmother put him to bed. And so for his daughter, now when I hear this song, what I think of is my dad as a young child and being tucked into the bed and, you know, his grandmother sitting there and him saying something like, "Grandma or Nana, would you sing me something?" And she croons to him the song.
You know, Louie, there's an old song going around here that's one of the top pop tunes in the nation that my grandmother taught me, one of the first songs I ever remember singing.
What's that?
"The Thing Called On Top of Old Smoky."
Old Smoky.
Remember that thing?
Yeah, man.
Now, they didn't sing it the way she taught it to me, and back in them days, they didn't sing it like they sing it now.
No.
I'm going to get the boys and see if we can do it like the old, old-timers used to do.
All right, let's hear it.
They're going to join in on here. "On Top of Old Smoky," huh? "Top of Old Smoky, all covered in snow, I lost my true lover by a courting too slow. On top of old Smoky, I went there to weep for a false-hearted lover. Is worse than a thief. A thief, he will rob you and take what you have. But a false-hearted lover will put you in your grave.
I am so impressed by the quality of these recordings, Jed.
Well, you know, it's amazing because they weren't exactly stored under the best conditions through those many years we talked about. But I think the one of the things that was fascinating to me was that when we were doing transfers, we would they would have different gauge needles, and we would sit there and close your eyes and let the ears tell you which needle could actually reach down in those grooves and give us the best sound. And the other thing, very little, if anything, was done on the transfers as far as a hiss or a pop. The biggest thing was making sure that you have 72 shows, that the level when you leave one show to the next show is somewhat balanced, so you don't have something that's really bright or drops. And I think as Colin worked with Joe on this, really deserves kudos for being able to give us the fidelity, because it's as good, if not better, than the MGM Masters.
By according to slow. Well, that's all right. Yes, sir. It's been a long, long time since I've heard
that. That's the old version of it there, on top of old Smokey.
And how I loved hearing that. Hank's wife, Audrey Cullen, is on many of the early shows. Tell us about that relationship and how that worked in the beginning.
Well, you know, Audrey, God bless her, did not have the best singing voice, but she wanted to be an entertainer. And I think she saw Hank's success as kind of a springboard from which she could launch her own career. And she got a recording contract with Decca Records around the time of the Mother's Best shows, and she was promoting her Decca recordings on the Mother's Best shows. I mean, Hank said one time, boys, it's heck to have a wife who wants to sing, but it's hell to have one who wants to sing and can't. And Audrey, she couldn't, but she sung anyway.
And here is a piece, Thank God My Mother Prayed For Me.
Right now, we want to do our morning hymn for all of our good friends and neighbors that listen to our Mother's Best show every morning. Here's one that I can say this, I imagine. I know I can tell the truth. We get more requests for this song than any number we do now. On all of our shows, we're glad you like it. I wrote this song 2 or 3 years ago. By the way, you can buy this record if you'd care to have it. Audrey and myself own MGM Records. It's under the name of Hank and Audrey. I heard my mother praying for me. Me.
That's Hank Williams and his wife, Audrey, singing, "Thank God My Mother Prayed for Me." And you're listening to the Diane Rehm Show. We've got lots of folks waiting on the phones. Let's open the phones, take some calls. 800-433-8850. Let's go to Grand Rapids, Michigan. Good morning, Patricia.
Good morning, Diane and Jet. I will try to make this as brief as possible. During Hank's prime time, not only was I a fan, but I was a disc jockey here in Grand Rapids of classic country music. And during that time, Hank was recording transcriptions for Army recruiting. They were 15-minute segments. And when I left the radio station because, quote and unquote, they canned the country music, I said, "May I have the library?" And they said, "Why not?" And I brought all of it home with me, and I still have lots of those transcriptions of Hank and his 15-minute recruiting segments. And he did basically the same thing he's doing on these releases now. And I wouldn't part with them for the world.
Too bad.
How about that, Jet?
Well, that's just another treasure trove of my dad, and we're just so fortunate that, you know, as people start to go through their attics and their trunks and things like that, not only my dad's music and stuff have survived or have been saved, a lot of wonderful gifts have been brought back.
Thanks for calling, Patricia. You know, we heard Hank singing with Audrey in that last cut, but their marriage really didn't go too well, and perhaps this song, Cold, Cold Heart, was one of the products that came out of it.
We're going to start things off this morning, friends, with a brand new song. Just been released on MGM Records. One of my favorites. I wrote this one a couple months ago. Fellas, let's do a little bit of Cold, Cold Heart. I try so hard, my dear, to show that you're my every dream. Yet you're afraid each thing I do is just some evil scheme. A memory from your lonesome past keeps us so far apart. Why can't I free your doubtful mind and melt your cold, cold heart? Another love before my time made your heart sad and blue, and so my heart is paying now for things I didn't do. In anger, unkind words are said that make the teardrops start. Why can't I free your doubtful mind and melt your cold, cold heart? You'll never know how much it hurts to see you sit and cry. You know you need and want my love, yet you're afraid to try.
One of my very favorite songs, Hank Williams singing Cold, Cold Heart, part of the Complete Mother's Best Recordings Plus. Short break. We'll be right back.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. By the George Lucas Educational Foundation, creator of Edutopia, a source for what works in education. Learn more at edutopia.org. And by the Overbrook Foundation, supporting catalogchoice.org, a nonprofit service that allows customers to decide which catalogs to receive in the mail. This is NPR.
These days, comedian Mike Birbiglia gets good gigs. He's a regular contributor for This American Life. But early in his career, things were different.
One of the shows, I showed up and they had me performing in the center of a walkathon for lupus. And the guy who booked me looked me in the eye and he goes, "I know it's not ideal."
Mike Birbiglia, join us for the next Fresh Air.
Cotton fields and whippoorwills, where I used to live and wander through the rocks and through the rills. I can see my old dear mammy while around the place she goes. On my farm in Louisiana, where the old Red River flows.
You know, what's extraordinary is that these recordings have never been released before. These were the live, well, to recording of these radio broadcasts. And now, for the first time, people can hear them on recordings. How does that make you feel, Jet?
It makes me feel fantastic. And when you hear these recordings, you can hear when it's live and there's no takebacks. There's a magic, there's an energy that puts these recordings, I think, superior to what would be considered, say, the mastered version, because that's exactly what it is. You do it in a studio, an engineer, it's filtered. But where these recordings are live and my dad's singing it, someone said you can tell it's a gut sing.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's just putting everything he owns into the version of it.
And he moved a lot, didn't he?
He did. He also, you know, he was the first for a lot of first superstar, first entertainer to dress, to have a MO with the suits and the cowboy hats and the, you know, and then also to actually, when he performed on stage, to actually, you know, have that movement to the music. And, you know, I think he set a high bar and a lot of entertainers followed him.
A long time before Elvis Presley started moving.
Well, you know, the thing about Elvis, I said, if you look at my dad, you can see a lot of the characteristics, too. And also, too, I know from people, I never met Elvis, but I've talked to a lot of people that played on some of his sessions. And he was Elvis absolutely adored my dad and recorded a lot of his music.
Now, I want to let listeners know you can see a pictorial tribute to Hank Williams at our website, drshow.org. So I hope you'll take advantage of that. Here's a comment, let's see, from Marie, who says, "Jet, you mentioned earlier you were the best-kept secret in country music. Do you think it did you a disservice? And do you think it fueled the issues you and Hank Williams Jr. had later in your life?"
I think it did a disservice in being denied the right to your identity of who you really are and where your genes and your historian part of your life comes from. When Hank Jr. and I first met, and I said to him that, you know, it was a real shame that as adults we had to straighten out a mess that we did not create, because both of us were taken advantage of as minors, and the estate was set up to where you had the attorneys for the estate and the administrators, and we were minors and had no say-so. And they kept my father's estate open past my 23rd birthday and ran the statutes without notifying me. And so as adults, as I said, we both had to straighten it out, and we did, and it's hard to believe that some 17 years ago, and that we have put our father's image, music, and memory and legacy to the front, and both of us have stepped up to the plate as the children of Hank Williams to make sure that, with this project especially, that his music is shared throughout the world.
You know, it's interesting, because after your grandmother died, you ended up in a lot of different foster homes.
One of the conditions for my grandmother to adopt me because of her age and health was that I would stay within the family. Well, her daughter, when her mother passed, immediately put me into the care of the state of Alabama. I was put into the foster homes, later adopted again. My identity was concealed from me until I went on that search. Mm-hmm. And as I said, I not only got the answers to my questions, they were the answers I wanted to hear, that I was wanted.
Now, here is a message for you. Is it true that your father broke into Nashville by composing Your Cheating Heart for a producer in 15 minutes? And is it true that the only chords he knew were C, G, and D7? Colin?
Well, I think we've already proved that he knew more than three chords just this morning, haven't we? And no, he certainly didn't break in with Your Cheating Heart, because that didn't actually come out until after he died. It was released about a week after he died. He came to Nashville to write religious songs for Fred Rose, and there's a story, it could be true, it could not, that Fred gave him a title, and Hank went back to Montgomery and wrote a song around it, but that song was Mansion on the Hill.
The movie that came out in the 60s, Your Cheating Heart, that actually, the scene was that Fred Rose gave my dad to write a song, and he went in the room, and of course the song he wrote was Your Cheating Heart. But that song was written in the very end of my dad's life, and as Colin said, it was released after his death. But the song that best we can tell that he wrote was Mansion on the Hill.
Let's go now to Hot Springs, Arkansas. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. I just wanted to share that I've been all over the world. I'm a professor. I'll be teaching at the University of Oklahoma and Oklahoma City College next year. But I've just finished teaching with the Texas colleges out on the ships with the United States military, and I once had a radio program called BB&C, Big Ben and Company, and I played Hank Williams on that, and I also sang it for Maggie, Duchess of Argyle, and the most startling time was when I sang it in the House of Lords, in the Houses of Parliament, for Lord Longford and Lady Brain, who was married to Lord Brain from North Carolina, and I did a yodeling version up in the House of Lords, the dome there. I thought it was hilarious. It travels well, that's what I've got to tell you. I've carried it all over the world with me. I even sing it sometimes when I'm out on a frigate in the combat zones in the Gulf of Aden working for the PACE program for the Navy out in off the coast of Somalia. Huh. It's an amazing thing how it travels. I come from Oklahoma, and I had a group called the Guadalupe River Bottom Boys. I used to hang out with Mason Williams. You know him from Classical Gas and the Smothers Brothers. Mm-hmm. But it is just, it's a country tradition, and, you know, we just love it. It is the voice of the people. It's the voice of the pulse. The Woody Guthrie, This Land Is Your Land. And in my program, I used to use Arlo Guthrie's, you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant.
But Ben, that's just great. Thank you for sharing those memories. To Brad in Greensboro, North Carolina, you're on the air.
Hello, thank you. Jet, you may not remember this story, but back in the 80s, before you settled the estate question with your family that you had just learned about, actually, and it was definite that, you were Hank's daughter. There was a party in Birmingham, Alabama. You were planning to record, and I'm a songwriter, and some of my songwriter friends invited me to come to this party, and we were going to play songs, pitch songs for you. And my wife is adopted, so she went with me to see who this Jet Williams was. Well, the problem was you and she stayed in the other room talking about finding her birth parents and what you had done, and you were counseling her on this. And so none of the songwriters were able to pitch any songs to you because you guys were tied up all night talking about it. And I must say, the thing that impressed me was that you were just, despite your quickly growing fame over this, you were just another person that was there, and your grandmother did well. You mm-hmm. weren't above your raising, as they say in Alabama.
Oh.
And I was traveling recently. I saw that you were playing, performing somewhere, and I thought, oh, it's good to know Jet's getting out and playing. So you are still playing occasionally, I assume.
Yes, and I'll take those songs now.
Okay, if I'd just like to know where to send them.
Well, just go on the internet, type in my name, and we'll make contact.
Okay, my name's Brad Reeves, and thank you, Diane.
All right, Brad, I'm glad you called. I guess people approach you a lot with potential songs.
Well, yes, they do. And the thing about it is, I tell people, I said, you know, some songs are good. Some songs, I say they're like clothes. And I think that's where, like with my dad, when he could write his own songs to fit his style, it's like having custom-made clothes. And so not every song fits every singer. And so if you can find the singer that can fit that style, then you may well just have a hit.
Jet Williams, she's a musician in her own right, the only daughter of Hank Williams, Colin Escott, Grammy Award-winning author and music historian, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. There's a song here I'd like to hear, and it's I'm Bound for the Promised Land. Tell us about that, Colin.
You know, every show, Hank did a hymn. You know, he signed off every show with a hymn. And he wrote some good ones. You know, he wrote I Saw the Light. But, you know, he was doing a show every day, so he quickly exhausted the supply of his own hymns. So that forced him back, you know, to the hymns that he learned when he was a kid. And this I guess, was one that he retrieved from some old hymnal, you know, that he sang. I mean, he always said that the first memory he had was sitting on the piano stool next to his mom in a little country church in Alabama, listening to her sing and play the piano. And I would very much bet this is one of the songs he picked up there.
Friends, right now it's hymn time. All the boys gathering around. We're going to go back and get one of the first ones I ever learned. This is an old one. I think Louie might even join in with us on this one. You're going to sing on this, and you and Burrhead fight over who's going to sing bass here. We're going to join up here on I'm Bound for the Promised Land.
On Jordan's stormy banks I stand and cast a wishful eye. Lie. I am bound for the promised land.
How I love these hymns. And you say he included them in every program.
Every show there was a hymn.
Isn't that great?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's take a caller in Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Good morning, Barbara.
Good morning. Enjoy your program, Diane.
I'm so glad.
I just wanted to say to Jess, I wanted to say how much I appreciate your father's music, and I've always heard it from my parents because I grew up with my parents' music. This was my parents' music. We need more of this on the radio today. We have a lot of music that you can't understand the words to. The music your father was singing, we can understand the words to it and really love it.
You know, it's true. There is music on the air today where you hear music, you have no idea what people are saying.
Well, unfortunately, I think today everybody's depending on the technology. It can cross the T's and dot the I's, but it cannot give the voice to personality. And I think that they've sort of sterilized the music. But to our caller's point, I believe that my father's music is generational because I saw your father back in 1951, or my mama's favorite singer, or, you know, I heard your dad on the radio, and it's part of America's music fabric, I believe. And as I said, it's generational, and it's been passed down, and it's still being passed down.
All right. And there's one last song that we have to hear, and that's Cool Water. Tell us about that, Colin.
Well, the funny thing about Hank Williams is that he dressed his band like cowboys, you know, with the hats and the Western outfits. But he always, the music he loved, I think, came from his personal experience, and his personal experience was not of the West. And he only ever did two Western songs. This is one of them. I think it could just be his finest vocal performance to for this amount of control at this tempo to keep the tension going is pretty magical.
We're going to start off this morning with a classic, gentlemen. One of these Sandy classics. One of the prettiest Western songs I reckon anybody ever wrote. I don't know how pretty I'm going to sing it. Get in the key of C, gentlemen. And all better do it in D. And this chord. Cool water, you ready?
All day I faced a barren waste without the taste of water. Cool water. Old Ann and I with throats burned dry.
And all the music you've heard this morning came from Hank Williams, The Complete Mother's Best Recordings, plus my guest, Jet Williams, daughter of Hank Williams, Colin Eskar. He's Grammy Award-winning author, music historian. Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Diane. And
thank you so much.
Thanks for listening. I'm Diane Rain.
To water, cool, clear water.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Susan Neighbors, Denise Couture, and Monique Nazareth. The engineer is Toby Schreiner. Dory Annisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives, transcripts, podcasts, and CD sales. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org, and we're on Facebook and Twitter. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR.
Cool. The shadows.